Finally, some economic news that isn't half bad. Of course, that could mean it's only half good.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Steve Chiotakis. Given the present climate, any spending is a hopeful sign, so you could look at today's report from the Commerce Department as an indication that things at least aren't getting worse. Until that is, you take a look at the income side of things. Marketplace's Tamara Keefe has the numbers for us from Washington.
U.S. consumer spending rose for a second straight month in February. It was up 0.2%, which is basically what the market was expecting. Though adjusting for inflation actually brings consumer spending into slightly negative territory. This follows January's surprisingly high 1% increase. Before that, there had been 6 months of declines. Nigel Galt, chief U.S. economist at IHS Global Insight, says it seems things are starting to stabilize on the consumer end.
It does look like the worst period for the consumer, the steepest declines, are now behind us.
Galt says falling employment was also on display in government numbers released today. Incomes fell in February by 0.2%. This was more than analysts had been expecting and is the result of continued layoffs. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
So is Wall Street's morning cup half empty or half full today? Analysts told us this week's rally might not last. Seems they were right. The Dow has backtracked 100 points at this hour, 1.3%. The Nasdaq's lost 1.75%. The S&P 500 down 1.5%. European markets also down, but most Asian markets were up. President Obama hears from leaders of some of the country's biggest banks today. The White House says he wants to hear firsthand how credit markets are faring. And the chief executive also plans to tell those banking CEOs once again they've got to bring a halt to what he's called their irresponsible culture. French workers are just as mad about their executives getting big bonuses and golden parachutes. There have been huge protests across that country and, shall we say, a rather avant-garde way of displaying outrage at a factory run by an American company. Anita Elash joins us from Paris with more on this. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's been happening this week?
Well, the big event was this hostage taking at the 3M factory in Pithiviers. About half the workers there are getting laid off. And so on Tuesday, when the company's director came in to negotiate severance packages, things got out of hand and he ended up locked inside his office where he stayed until early on Thursday morning. That was the second boss napping in a couple of weeks. So there were a couple of directors of Sony France that also spent a couple of days locked in their office. And then this week we had hundreds of workers who are losing their jobs at a Continental tire plant demonstrating on the streets of Paris and burning tires not far from the presidential palace.
Why is all this labor unrest happening now?
Well, it's because people really are very angry about the way the Sarkozy government has been handling the economic crisis. People mostly think that he's doing a lot more for the rich than he's doing for the ordinary working person. And things keep happening to reinforce that point of view. We've been seeing more and more layoffs. Another 80,000 people lost their jobs last month. And then at the same time, we've been hearing about bank executives taking bonuses or stock options and managers at companies that are laying people off, leaving with very large golden parachutes.
I have to say the French seem to do things differently, though. It's a little hard to imagine, let's say, union auto workers throwing the head of GM in the back of a car and taking him to an undisclosed location.
Well, yes, that's a bit hard to imagine. But in France, it's not hard to imagine at all, because this isn't the first time that workers have resorted to boss napping. There were a couple of cases about a year ago, and that was well before anybody realized that there was going to be an economic crisis.
So watch out, Mr. CEO, it can come to this. Anita Elash, reporting from Paris, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Friday, March 27th at marketplace.org. Heroin production in Afghanistan is helping fund Taliban insurgents fighting U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Next week, the U.N. meets to discuss what to do about the heroin trade, but Russia and China, two Security Council members, are getting a head start. Today, they're convening a meeting of their own to come up with alternatives to U.S. policy in their backyard. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports.
The Shanghai Cooperation Organization, or SCO, was created in 2001 as an alternative to NATO. It's made up of Russia, China, and four countries in Central Asia. The SCO is meeting today to map its own strategy for what to do in Afghanistan.
The West is being criticized for its lack of handling of the drug trade, but I'm not sure what alternative policies the SCO is able to put up in order to deal with that problem.
That's Savante Cornell. He's a Central Asia expert at Johns Hopkins University. The SCO will discuss ways to stem heroin smuggling through the region. But Cornell says the group may not be able to tackle the root of the problem, poverty.
These are not countries that can move in and try to improve the situation in Afghanistan for farmers or provide alternative livelihoods to drug producers. It is countries that have a track record of using only repressive methods rather to handle the drug trade.
And repressive methods, as Russia learned in its failed war there, don't work in Afghanistan. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, Saturday, is the 30th anniversary of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island. As Danielle Carson reports, after three decades, there's renewed support for the industry.
Nuclear power was a political pariah for years, but there's been a huge shift in how the industry is perceived these days, according to Tom Kaufman with the Nuclear Energy Institute.
And I think a lot of that is due to the fact the industry learned its lessons. It has put all of its focus on safety, and I believe Americans see that.
In fact, a recent Gallup poll finds nearly 60% of Americans support nuclear power. It now produces about 20% of the country's energy. 17 companies have applied for permits to build new plants, but the cost is prohibitive, and there's also the problem of disposing radioactive waste. Pietro Nivola is an energy specialist at the Brookings Institution.
That is certainly a major obstacle, and it's going to have to be resolved in order to produce the level of uncertainty for the industry.
Developing more nuclear power could be a challenge without a long-term plan to store nuclear waste, especially now that President Obama has scaled back funding a nuclear waste dump in Nevada. In Washington, I'm Danielle Carson for Marketplace.
Is the world ready for a new business idea from Iceland? After the collapse of its biggest banks last October, investors may be wary, but the island's latest plan has nothing to do with high finance. Alongside its fishing, the country wants to take up data farming. From Reykjavik, Stephen Beard sends us this report.
After the calamitous excursion into global banking, Iceland has a new message for the world. Send us your computer servers and we'll keep them cool. Behind this electronic door lie several acres of empty space. It's a vacant warehouse in a former US Navy base. Now Willy Torsteinsson wants to fill it with computers.
Well, this is it. This is our data center. This is the warehouse we are converting for our servers.
Torsteinsson runs Vern Global, Iceland's first server farm. He's hoping to persuade some of the biggest companies that operate on the internet to base their servers here. Iceland's low temperatures are an attraction.
Because we don't have to spend a lot of electricity cooling the computers down once we have actually run them.
All you have to do then is just open the doors and let the wind blow through.
Yeah, basically that's pretty much it.
Iceland has another advantage, a reliable supply of low-cost electricity to run the servers. That power is generated by glacial runoff and by hot water and steam piped up from beneath the Earth's crust. It's plentiful power, says Gudni Johansson of the National Energy Authority.
We are producing electricity five times more than we need for our own normal domestic use. So we have a lot more to give of renewable energy.
Iceland's electricity is carbon-free. That's another reason why companies should place their servers here, says Tor Björgolfsson, owner of Vern Global. He says power-hungry data centres using carbon-fired electricity are very polluting.
By the year 2020, data centers will be a bigger carbon emitter than the airline industry. And certainly people can see more regulation coming online in terms of carbon emissions.
Björgolfsson is controversial. He owned a chunk of one of the banks that went bust last fall. No way will his server farm repair that financial damage. But, say his supporters, it's the kind of clean, green business that might help restore Iceland's tarnished image abroad. In Reykjavik, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Later today, the president will be meeting with bank executives and trade groups. On the agenda, regulation, commercial loans, and, of course, financial bailouts. But as Amanda Aronchik reports, it's the culture of Wall Street that's worrying the masses. They're mad and showing signs they're not going to take it anymore.
It's been a tense few weeks between Capitol Hill and the banking industry. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs says the uproar over corporate excess will certainly come up today.
Obviously, they'll talk about stuff that's been in the news for over the past several weeks, compensation and bonuses and excesses like that.
The concern over bonuses has been distracting from the core issues. But as financial analyst Karen Shaw-Batru says, that's not what's surprising about the executive's visit.
These guys come and go all the time in and out of the White House singly and in groups. That anyone cares is the really unusual aspect of the meeting.
Of course, it'd be hard not to care these days, as the president's press secretary points out.
Wall Street and Main Street, all of us are in the same boat. We're all in this together.
Gibbs also said the president will remind the bankers what's good for them has to be good for the American people, too. I'm Amanda Aronchik for Marketplace.
New York's legislature is putting the finishing touches on its budget. And like a lot of places, the Empire State is having to make some tough choices. One item you might not expect to see in a slimmed-down budget is a huge tax credit to bring in film and TV producers. But they haven't yelled cut just yet. And as Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports, a lot of states consider film a real necessity.
Cut!
It's not a surprise to have a film crew set up on the streets of New York. In this case, an episode of Law & Order is being filmed on Manhattan's Lower East Side.
Rolling.
What may be surprising is that for every dollar NBC Universal spends here, the company gets 30 cents back from the state at tax time. And not just for the equipment and the salaries of the 50 or so crew members and makeup artists gathered here.
How many breakfasts would you say you're doing per day?
Could be about 150 to 100.
Alex Valdivia works as a chef in a large food truck that caters specifically to New York's film industry. It employs about 30 people.
It is about jobs, clearly. Jobs for New Yorkers.
John Johnston runs a trade association called the New York Production Alliance. He says film and TV production in New York State directly created more than 7,000 additional jobs last year. Almost three times that when you include the indirect jobs, like hotel and restaurant employees.
We've got 5 years of proven track record here that says this is a program that does financially work and create jobs. Other states can imitate that.
Other states already are, neighboring Connecticut, for example, and Michigan, which is trying desperately to create jobs for laid-off auto workers.
In 2007, three films were produced in Michigan. In 2008, actually between April and December of 2008, 35 films were produced.
That's Mike Shore of Michigan's production office. He says that jump came last spring after Michigan introduced a 40% tax credit. One of GM's truck plants is being turned into a soundstage, and the state is ramping up the marketing effort.
You've got more shoreline than almost any state other than Alaska. You've got vast natural beauty and trees and mountains in northern Michigan. You've got cities that have neighborhoods that were built in the 1800s. We can give you a look like Boston.
Shore says there are no plans yet for a Hollywood-style sign in Detroit. But don't think Hollywood's not paying attention. Last month, California rolled out a 20 to 25% film production tax credit of its own. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. You can stay up to date on the latest financial twists and turns with Scott Jagow's Scratchpad blog. Check it out at marketplace.org. And thanks very much for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.